coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you that the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But we ask you to hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line from back in Annapolis, Maryland, Pastor David Whitney, and we're going to be talking about the Institute of the Constitution, an organization dedicated to teaching the American people about our heritage of freedom, which is based upon the Constitution. And if you don't understand the foundations of our freedom, you can't understand anything that's going on today. Now, David, we've already talked on two occasions about the background of the Civil War and its impact upon current Supreme Court decisions, but audience has not heard that discussion, so I really think that's such an important issue. Thanks so much for being with us today.
You're welcome, and thank you, Dr. Stan, for the great work you're doing in getting the truth out and having a voice of freedom that's not heard in most parts of the country, that people need to understand the foundation of our nation, and that it was established as a Christian nation very clearly and very specifically if you read the works of the Founding Fathers, and it's only by a successful propaganda effort that's been going on for well nigh to 100 years at this point in time that has persuaded most people that that was not the case. And actually, it's very simple to discover that is the case. You go back and read what the founders themselves wrote and what they said and their letters and quotes. It's very clear that they established a Christian nation, and they intended this nation only to survive if it retained Christianity at its heart and soul. Our second president, John Adams, is the one who said that our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people, and by religious, if you understand his frame of reference, he was talking about religion in the Christianity sense, not religion as in Buddhism or Hinduism or some other religion, but only the Christian religion as practiced in all of its orthodox branches was the means by which this constitutional republic would work.
Now, of course, it didn't mean that everybody had to be a Christian or everybody had to believe in Christianity, but what it did mean is that Christianity was the foundation of the religious beliefs of the founders, and they believed that freedom came from God, and because freedom came from God, then, of course, we had a right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and governments were instituted among men to preserve the rights to life, liberty, and freedom. These were Christian beliefs. You mean you go into a Buddhist country or a Hindu country or a Muslim country, there's no freedom in any of those countries. There's not one, democracy in all of the Muslim areas, and certainly not in India or anywhere in Southeast Asia. America was unique because we were created by Christians on a Christian foundation, but not saying that everybody had to believe the same way. But if you destroyed the Christian foundation of our country, you would destroy the country, and that was exactly what some of the people realized, and that's why they set out to destroy our Christian heritage. Well, David, of course, you're on the front lines of trying to educate people.
That's right.
Are they learning about it?
Yes, it's exciting to see people waking up. Just last month, we had 900-plus people turn out to hear Chief Justice of Supreme Court of Alabama, Judge Roy Moore, because they understood the issue related to the display of the Ten Commandments in Alabama is really a religious issue. It's an issue at the heart of what is freedom of religion in our land. Is it possible for the state to acknowledge God publicly?
Well, of course, it was a non-sectarian God. It did not say it had to be the Christian God.
Right.
But if you did not acknowledge God, and if there is no God, then, of course, the Declaration of Independence is a lie. And, of course, freedom will cease to exist. We'll be back in just a moment here with David Whitney. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story. And with us today is Pastor David Whitney from the Institute of the Constitution, and we're going to be talking today about the Civil War, because, you know, the tragedy is I don't think most people understand that the Civil War had nothing to do with slavery.
That's
this
right.
is what we're told today. Oh, it was all about slavery, and the wicked Southerners, of course, they had slaves, and, well, only about 5% of the Southerners had slaves. 95% of them didn't have slaves, and most of them felt that slavery was wrong, and we were well on the way to doing away with slavery as they'd done in England. But there were people, of course, who did not want that. They wanted the war, and then they wanted to increase the power of the central government over the lives of the people, because we're really dealing with a long-term movement
yeah.
and very, very wicked people who saw nothing wrong with this fratricidal war. Now,
yeah.
you know, I think the most startling thing that I've learned is the fact that the Emancipation Proclamation that freed the slaves wasn't written and issued until 1863. We'd already been in the war for 2 years, and it didn't free all of the slaves. Would you like to talk about
yes,
that, David?
Yes, actually, you know, it didn't free any slaves, because it declared that the slaves in the rebel, what they called the rebel territory, in other words, the territory is still controlled by the Confederate states, it freed the slaves in the Confederate territory. Now, the Union had by that time conquered various areas of the South, but the Emancipation Proclamation was very specific that it did not free any slaves in the area controlled by the Union, which is kind of hypocritical. If you say you're really freeing slaves, why don't you free all the slaves? And we realize that if you read the first inaugural address of Abraham Lincoln, he stated right there at the very beginning that he had no intention of freeing slaves, and he started the war without any intention of freeing slaves. So you have to ask, what happened in those first 2 years of the war? Well, Lincoln began to recognize that it was not a simple war, and it was not a war that would be quickly ended. As a matter of fact, one of the first battles that was fought in Virginia, the people in Washington, D.C. got in carriages and buggies and took a picnic basket out to see this battle, the Battle of Manassas, and they thought, you know, this would be it. One battle and it's over. And they were woefully unprepared for year after year, and hundreds and thousands and hundreds of thousands of casualties and the dead piling up. And so Lincoln realized he had to do something, particularly when he faced the threat that Britain would begin to side with the South. There were some economic ties, and we've talked about this before. We ought to mention it.
Hold that thought for just a moment. We'll be right back here with Pastor David Whitney telling you the true story of the Civil War. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, the tragedy is they don't really teach the truth about the Civil War in our schools today. And of course, the Emancipation Proclamation was not issued at the beginning of the Civil War. It was only issued after massive draft riots in the North because people didn't want to go off and fight and die for Lincoln's war. And they didn't want to kill other Americans, or they didn't believe in the war. And they knew it was really about economics. It was about mercantilism. It was about the tariffs that protected the North and impoverished the South. But of course, this is not the history that you're reading, because they've rewritten the history, and you need to go back, you know, and study the history. And those of you who've seen that movie, it's called The Gangs of New York, and you remember that there were the gangs there. But towards the end of the movie, it begins to show the draft riots, and there were large numbers of people who were rioting, and so they began shelling the city to try to put down the draft riots. The people did not want this war. They had to have a justification. Well, let's say it's about slavery. And so in 1863, while Lincoln issued the Emancipation Proclamation to free the slaves in the South, but not anything that was controlled by the North. So it didn't free the slaves in the North. It only freed the slaves in the South. What's wrong with this picture? If you haven't read the wonderful book, The Creature from Jekyll Island, which we carry by certainly Ed Griffin, why we have that, you should get it. And isn't there another book on The Real Lincoln?
Yes, The Real Lincoln by Professor Tom DiLorenzo explains and shows from the sources, original sources, so you go back and check to see that he's not making this up. He's quoting, you know, the papers of that day. He's quoting the statements of Lincoln himself, the statements of the various departments of state and so on. And it's very clear that Lincoln's aim had everything to do with centralizing power in a strong federal government centered in Washington, D.C. The exact thing our founders feared, the exact thing they structured the Constitution to prevent is exactly what took place as a result of the war between the states.
And, of course, they've rewritten the history since then. And those of you who don't believe that, they've actually hired historians to rewrite history, and those people who want to tell it the truth, way they can't get jobs in our major universities. They can't get their books published. And eventually, of course, they realize that the only way to get ahead is to go along with the people who are really manipulating things behind the scenes. The book Foundations, Their Power and Influence, which we have, gets into that. My interview with Norman Dodd, who is the director of research for a congressional committee that investigated the great tax-exempt foundations, talks about how they bought and purchased historians to rewrite the history to confuse the American people.
And they've succeeded. They've succeeded very, very wildly, because most people do not know the reality of what took place in the war between the states and the destruction of our constitutional liberties that began with the war between the states. Of course, the destruction was greatest in the South following the war. The so-called Reconstruction of the South completely obliterated much of the freedoms that people had secured up to that point in time by the U.S. Constitution. And the march against those states didn't end there, but the northern states as well lost their freedoms. If you look at the 10th Amendment, it says very, very clearly that those powers that are given to the federal government as described in the Constitution are limited just to those powers listed in the Constitution. In the Constitution, you'll never find the federal government given the power over any health care provisions. And so why do we have all this discussion about drug benefits for seniors and all this kind of stuff? It's as if the Constitution and its wording no longer is regarded as anything at all. It doesn't limit federal power. And that breaking through the boundaries that the Constitution set around the federal government began with the war between the states, and it began by destroying the powers that the federal Constitution granted to the states. In other words, as our founders said, the federal powers were to be very limited, very restricted, but the states' powers were to be unlimited. They were to have all the rest of the powers that were not specifically listed and enumerated in the federal Constitution. Well, today it's the opposite. It's the other way around. Just to mention what happened for Alabama, that the Chief Supreme Court officer, Chief Justice Roy Moore, installed a monument of the Ten Commandments in the state Supreme Court building, and the federal judge, a lower circuit federal judge, said, that's unconstitutional, you have to remove it. Well, the Constitution of the United States never granted the federal government power over the buildings or over the decisions of the state of Alabama or any other state.
And especially not having to do with religion, because the First Amendment says Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. And that limitation was purely on Congress. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until the mid-1920s, that somebody said, well, maybe the 14th Amendment might apply to the states. Those same restrictions are mm-hmm. placed on the federal government. Now, it went all the way from about 1870 to 1925. When you had wicked people who had been put in the Supreme Court to begin to change our structure of our government to allow the centralization of all power, with Washington, D.C. as a stepping stone to a dictatorship, and then, of course, the New World Order and the New World Religion.
Yes.
People don't understand, if 75 years that they were, well, not seven, let's see, it was 40, 65 years after the 14th Amendment was passed, somebody suddenly came up with this brilliant idea. Oh, what they really meant was, no, that what they really did not mean, to apply to the state the restrictions of the First Amendment. But little bit by little bit, why they've been eroding our freedom, because there are people who hate freedom, who hate God, and boy, they're sure doing a great job.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of those are employed right there in the Supreme Court. And if you doubt that, you need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, or some of our recent newsletters that will point out that there are people there who were put there specific for the purpose of changing the structure of our society. And there were people dedicated to moving us from a Christian to a secular nation, and then ultimately, of course, to a pagan nation. And that is exactly where we are today.
And people could see very clearly in the time of the war between the states what was happening. And so, you wonder, why don't we hear anything about that? Well, as you said, the revisionist historians have completely suppressed the truth. But in the days of the preceding the war between the states, and at the beginning of the war between the states, there were outcries in public places and in the newspapers, even of the North. In other words, there were northern newspapers like New York Tribune that said the southern states should have the right to secede if they want to. We should not hold them into this union and force them at the point of a gun to stay in this union. They have the right to secede. But you know what happened? Lincoln, as a dictatorial tyrant, he took his federal troops, his army, and he sent his army to destroy the printing presses of those newspapers that published anything against his policies and his decisions. He was a dictator of the rankest sort, but most people don't know that because the truth about him has been suppressed.
And of course, you know, in the South, they refer to the Civil War as the War of Northern Aggression.
And I think they're right to call it that.
I think they are, too. But you see, people don't understand that the North invaded the South, and they were going to, of course, force the South to stay in the Union. They weren't going to allow them to secede. And really, 2 years later, they finally decide, oh, we've got to find some justification. 2,000 people were killed in one draft riot up in the North. Did you ever read about that in your paper?
Yes, I did. Oh, it's terrible.
Well, I know you would have, David, but I'm talking about the average individual. Mm. That was a rhetorical question. But, you know, the thing is that the Americans don't know that. Mm. And it was only then that they decided, well, let's make the war about slavery. And it's sort of like, you know, we go to Iraq because the weapons of mass destruction, they're threatening us. Saddam Hussein's going to use them on our troops. He's going to use them on New York. We can't wait even one more day. We've delayed too long. Well, see, there are no war weapons of mass destruction. Well, we had to go over there to free the people from the wicked Saddam Hussein. You know, he was killing people and torturing people, and he had the rape rooms. But remember, that's the same Saddam Hussein that was financed by the United States for so many years. And even back in the 1989-1990 period, we gave him billions and billions of dollars. That was after he had been killing his opponents and torturing all the people and had the rape rooms and had used poison gas, of course, that we'd given him, on the Iranians. See, the people don't think. They react emotionally because of what they're told. And there's nothing new. What we're seeing today is like deja vu all over again. Yeah, go back to the Civil War. They had to justify the war. And, of course, they had to come up with an excuse. It's all about slavery. And to this very day, most of the people don't understand that slavery was on the way out. It had already been done away with peacefully in Great Britain. And that was one of the things I think you were going to allude to.
Yes.
The reason that they had to bring in the slavery was because they were afraid that England would side with the South. And, of course, by bringing in slavery, that would make it difficult for England to side with the South.
England was very, very clearly anti-slavery by that point in time. And the economic impact of England helping the South would have enabled the South to succeed. And Lincoln couldn't dare let that happen. It's interesting. In the Constitution, one of the clear provisions is that there shall be no standing army. If an army was raised every 2 years, it had to be reauthorized by the Congress. That they could not allow a standing army. And it's interesting to see that's exactly the danger that was demonstrated by Lincoln, because he took the army and he used the army as his own personal vengeance on anybody that opposed him. Here in the state of Maryland, we faced a unique situation that most people don't know about. The state legislature only meets for several months in the winter time, and before they were able to meet, many of the legislators were talking about secession and voting on secession for Maryland to secede from the Union. But before they could meet, Lincoln sent his federal troops and arrested every member of the legislature of Maryland, and they were imprisoned in Fort McHenry for the duration, so that they could not vote. He eliminated the legislature of Maryland so they could not vote to secede from the Union.
Well, of course, there's so much that the American people are not being told by the controlled media. Mm-hmm. I bet you Rush Limbaugh, Bill O'Reilly, certainly Dan Rather, Tom Brokaw, and Barbara Walters aren't going to talk about this thing. Or here at the local, where I live in Santa Cruz, why they brought in Herbert Aptheker, who was the chief theoretician of the Communist Party some years. I went to the Communist meeting, and he was talking about how the Communists were there working back during the Civil War to centralize all power in Washington, D.C. That's what communism's all about, and exactly the same thing as the CFR and the Socialists.
Well, if there's any one tape that you should hear, it's my talk on geopolitics, an untold story that is vitally important if America is to survive as a free nation. It goes into the background of the forces that have created the wars of the 20th century, the Boer War, the First World War, the Second World War, Korea, Vietnam. We go into the ideological and the spiritual battle behind the forces that have moved America from crisis to crisis and are currently undermining the very fabric of our society. That number again, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and the tape, Geopolitics. It is vitally important that you help us to get this message out across America, because without knowledge, my people perish. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for copies of my talk on geopolitics.
Hello, this is health journalist Bill Sardi, and there's no better time to establish a biological response kit in your home. In an age when we hear about biological threats, more common are cases of E. coli in our food, cryptosporidium in our tap water, and staph germs, viruses, and molds in our air conditioning system. Why be a sitting duck and run to the doctor after you've got a problem? Why not take something to stay healthy, like Alamex, the all-new 100% pure Allicin garlic extract. You won't find Alamex in stores, but you'll find it by calling 866-405-4000. Alamex is equivalent to 15 cloves of fresh crushed garlic. And guess what? It's odor-free. Call 866-405-4000.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time I have to remind you that we carry some items that do help us to stay on the air. So it's 5 hours a day. We reach out across America. One of those items is the Big Berkey water filter, and of course, it's made of stainless steel. It's basically the design that's been used for missionaries for 150 years. You put the water in the top, it goes through the ceramic filters, which are packed with activated carbon, comes out the bottom, and of course, it's removed the vast majority of bacteria, of any sort of chlorine, of pesticides, of herbicides, of heavy metals. And there are a few things that are not taken out, like fluoride, arsenic, and MTBE, but you can get special filters to do that. And if you're in an area where you have fluoride in your water, you do not want your children or yourself drinking fluoridated water. If you don't know that they're poisoning us with that, why, we've got all sorts of documented information. And the fact that most dentists don't understand that is simply a reflection of how powerful the ADA is and the fluoride lobby and, of course, the media itself in lying to the people. Well, the Big Berkey water filter is $239.95. If you buy it through us, you get a couple of either a video or a four-tape set. You can see them up on our website at radioliberty.com. And, of course, if you want to get one, you give us a call. But I have to warn you that they're not available in either California or Iowa. Why aren't they available? Well, you'll have to talk to the bureaucrats, but of course they have rules and regulations. But we do have one that is available in California. It's called the Berkey Light Water Filter, and of course it's made of Lexan. It's clear. They make actually bulletproof glass out of Lexan, so you can see the level of water, which is an advantage. You have the filters, which are much more efficient than the regular filters, but they have to be changed every 2 to 4 years, whereas certainly the Big Berkey filters can be used over and over again and can be cleaned, and we'll tell you how to do that. If you either like to get either one of these, the Berkey Light, which is available in all states but Iowa, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. The Berkey Light is $199.95. The other is $239.95. Call right now. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is David Whitney from the Institute of the Constitution. And David, I want you to get your telephone number out now. Yes. We'll get it out later, but let's get it out now, or how they can reach you on the Internet.
They can reach us at phone number 410-760-9068. That's 410-760-9068. And our Internet site is iotconline.com. iotconline.com. And what we offer people is a package that enables them to educate themselves and a group of friends and family, perhaps a group of people from their church or their community, on what the founding fathers designed when they put together a constitution. It studies the Declaration of Independence. It studies each article and each amendment of the Constitution. It studies the religious beliefs of our founding fathers. It studies the history leading up to the founding of our nation, and it shows how clearly we were established as a Christian nation and with the Christian understanding that all men are sinners. And if all men are sinners, it doesn't mean just the person who goes into the ballot box is a sinner, but the person he elects into office is also a sinner. And therefore, government has two jobs. One is to restrain evil in the part of the populace so that people are not breaking God's law without impunity, but also to restrain those elected to office as well, that they would not have the ability to have unchecked power, because as Lord Acton, a Christian statesman said, that power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And our founding fathers understood this very clearly, that if you give unlimited power to a federal government, as our government currently has much unlimited power, it will be corrupt and it will abuse that power again and again and again. And we've seen it just in the past 10 years, some horrible examples in our land, and we're seeing it now, and we will see more of it unless things like the Patriot Act and the Homeland Security thing are turned around and people recapture the freedoms that were designed as part of our system of government and built into the structure of our Constitution.
Well, let's go to Fred calling from Salinas. Hi, Fred. Do you have a question or comment?
Welcome. Yes, I had a question, comment and a question. I just wanted to say that I found that they not only had draft riots in the North, they had a system set up where if you were drafted and you could pay somebody to take your place, that you could do that. Now they call that a student deferment, I guess.
All right, fine, yeah.
But I just want to ask your professor what if it was just not by happenstance that this was the same time that Marx and Engels and Hegel and everybody had their writings, and then this all come out right about just after all this was going on. Is there any?
I think it is not a happenstance, because those writers were writing from a philosophical worldview that had begun to grasp Europe. In other words, people in Europe became enamored with this idea that, if we give unlimited power to state control over people's lives, then we will truly have the good society, you know, the great society kind of idea. And Lincoln was captured by this idea. He wasn't the only one in our country that was, because there were others like Henry Clay that were fighting for this in the years leading up to the war between the states. There was a series of debates and battles going on in Congress that centered around this idea of, were we going to permit unlimited kind of power to the centralized government? And those who had a false view of human nature, that is, somehow if you elect somebody into office, somehow that act of electing them sanctifies them completely so that they're no longer evil and you can trust them, you know, that foolishness. So that there was many people at the same time, not only in Europe, but here in America as well, that began to believe that you could grant power to government without it being checked.
And I think there were a lot of people who thought that, you know, an authoritarian system would be the most unique and ideal form of government, but were you ever going to find people, you know, that you could trust? If men were angels, we wouldn't need government at all. And why would we think that the people who had seized power would be any less corrupt than the average individual? Better to let the people be free than to put ruthless people in charge of them. We've seen how democracy brought Adolf Hitler to power. We've seen how democracy brought Benito Mussolini to power. We've seen example after example. We saw a so-called democracy brought Robert Mugabe in Zimbabwe to power, the man who is intentionally today starving 6 million of his fellow countrymen to death, blacks primarily.
Marx says that's a progression from democracy to
dictatorship of the proletariat is what they want. Hey, thanks so much for calling, Fred. Do you have anything else? Do you want to hang on till after the...
No, that's it.
Okay, thanks so much.
Fred.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, there's so much that people should know. And of course, we just want you to keep listening to Radio Liberty, and hopefully you'll learn more and more and help us to educate people all across America.
Have you ever wondered about the boys we left behind in Vietnam, in Korea? Did you ever know that we left 25,000 American boys behind in Russia, in Siberia, at the end of the Second World War? Have you ever wondered what really happened at Oklahoma City, what really happened to TWA 800 when it went down off the eastern coast about a year ago? Well, ladies and gentlemen, all of the subjects are well covered in a fascinating book by Craig Roberts entitled The Medusa File. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, order The Medusa File. Actually, Craig Roberts was a police officer working on the Oklahoma City bombing. Now, this book has been suppressed very effectively across America, and it's self-published, but I promise you that there's no other book I know that will give you more contemporary history, frightening history that every American needs to know. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR now.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I just want to mention a couple of the other items we have. One of them is called Miracle 2 soap products. And if you're out there and you don't believe that these things can do anything more than just be soap products, well, they're good soap products. I will tell you that. But we have so many reports from so many people who use them that they really think that it's helped them with their rashes and their acne and their stomach upsets. And, well, you can go to our website and look what the manufacturer talks about, the benefits of Miracle 2 products, and we can't make any medical claims for them, but we can tell you that we've used them, we like them, and we wouldn't be without them. And many of our listeners have told us the most amazing, amazing stories. All we can do is tell you that they think that these products have given them truly miraculous results. If you'd like to know more about them, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, ask for Miracle 2 products. And then, of course, we carry Phenopoly, which is a board game that allows you or your children, your grandchildren, to learn to read and spell and pronounce words phonetically. A wonderful program by which you'll learn the 40 sounds of the English language, the 12 rules of the English language, and in about 16 hours you can undo all of the harm that's been done by the government schools, and you can actually learn to read and spell and pronounce words phonetically. Phenopoly is $139.95. Now, most of these programs are $300, $400, $500, $600. This is $139.95. We think it's a great buy. We've had many, many people call us and tell us they've gone through it two or three times, and these are people who are 50 and 60 years of age, and they've learned something every time they've actually use the Phenopoly set. So we do hope that many of you here will give serious consideration to calling us right now. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Pastor David Whitney, and we're talking about the Institute of the Constitution. We're talking about the Civil War. We're talking about what the Southerners referred to as the Northern Invasion. And, of course, they felt that the North had invaded them. What was their crime? They wanted to secede from the Union because, of course, the mercantilism. And basically, there were tariffs that protected the North so that they could, of course, sell their products at a very high rate. But there were no tariffs protecting the South. And so the Southerners were forced to buy from the North at a tremendous disadvantage, and they could have bought these things in England or elsewhere much more cheaply. So the people in the North were using the government for their own advantage, and that was wrong. And the Southerners said, we want to be able to buy products and sell our products anywhere we want to. We don't want Washington, D.C. telling us we have to buy from the North or telling us we can't sell elsewhere. So if you would like to know more about the background, is that pretty well covered?
Yes.
In that book, The Real Lincoln by Professor Tom DiLorenzo?
Mm-hmm. Real Lincoln by Tom DiLorenzo does an excellent job of covering all of the different areas.
We really should be covering that here at Radio Liberty.
It's an excellent read.
All right, let's go to Ron calling from Paso Robles. Hi, Ron. How are you doing?
Good evening. I understand. Great. Very interesting program you have on here, and I have a comment.
Go ahead.
I understand that the North wanted a strong central government, and the South was for states' rights. But wasn't it also true that the European banks, particularly the Bank of London, or Bank of England and France, wanted to split up the Union because they didn't want to see emerging a strong, powerful government or country to compete with them?
I think there's probably an element of truth to that. What's your thought on that, David?
I believe there is an element of truth to that.
That's why the South was supported by the central banks until the people got upset thinking the central bank in Europe, because the central banks were pro-slavery.
Yes, and that's that
so
was
then
why.
Then they had to curtail or terminate their help to the South.
And that's why Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation was timed in the middle of the war, because he made those sort of connections that he had to, you know, basically push back against the pressure that Britain was able to bring to bear in the war without actually physically being involved in the war.
Right.
Well, I think your point is well made, Ron. Anything else you'd like to say?
Yeah, I just wanted to say your last newsletter was tremendous, and particularly the article by Cindy
Feinberg. Feinberg, yes.
Yeah, and it was great. And I like to use part of it in my next newsletter.
You feel free to. And that's the greatest form of flattery you could give me, Ron. You go ahead and use it, the whole thing.
Well, thanks very much, and good luck to you both.
God bless you. Bye-bye.
God bless you.
And, of course, certainly Ron is down there in Paso Robles. He's the head of the local Constitution Party.
Oh, great.
And, of course, getting information out to people they would never get through the controlled press. Let's go to Steve calling from Salinas. Hi, Steve. How are you doing?
Good afternoon. Fine, thank you. How about you?
Doing great. Do you have a question or comment for our guest?
I have a question. I'd like Mr. Whitney just to touch on three quick little things, if we would.
All right. Why don't give him it one at a time? We'll give you
sure.
Three.
Okay. I had done a lot of reading of the papers of the time, and there was tremendous reference in the papers calling it a war of the tariffs.
Yes.
How much did the tariffs play a part in causing the war?
A huge part, because imagine that everything you purchased was raised by 50%. In order to cover the tariffs, and that meant that the people in the North, who were where the primary manufacturing base of our country was at that point in time, was in the North. So the North produced cloth, the North produced machines, the North produced most of the things that were, you know, not just raw materials. The South produced a lot of raw materials as well as agricultural goods. And so the South was at a disadvantage because it had to pay a much higher price for these items that it could have bought for 50% less if they were able to trade directly with Europe, but the tariffs prevented them from doing that, forcing them, therefore, to buy northern goods when they did not want to buy northern goods. And so they tried in Congress to overturn this a number of times, but because they did not have as numerous members of Congress as the North did, the North always outvoted them. So they began to realize that they were in a dance with, somebody said, when you start to dance with a bear, you don't decide when to stop. You dance to the end of the dance, the bear decides when to sit down. And they realized there was no way out of this except to secede from the Union. That was the only way they could get out of these unfair tariffs. So that had a great deal to do with the beginning of the war between the states.
And I think you're absolutely right, Steve. You see, this is what the American people today don't understand. They don't understand this was the war of the tariffs. This was a mercantile war. And they have been sold this bill of goods. It was all about slavery and the wicked wicked slave trade, which, of course, was on the way out. Only 5% of the Southerners held slaves, and most people in the South realized that slavery was inherently wrong. And, of course, it was gradually to be phased out in America, but there were people who did not want that. They wanted the war to centralize power, just exactly as there are people today who want a war in the Middle East to justify taking away the freedom of the American people here at home in the name of, oh, fighting terrorism. Anything else? Now, what's the second point?
Second point. Was the South debt free before the Civil War?
I don't believe it was debt free, but it was not deeply indebted. You know, certainly not in a position where it could not control, you know, what was taking place. Of course, once the war began and the South established its own currency, that currency had very little backing. So as the war went on, there was a very disastrous economic consequences with indebtedness that took place in the South. But that's another issue. That was not prior to the war between the states.
Okay, third question.
One last thing. Read the biography of a man named Benjamin Levi, who was supposedly the financial genius behind the South.
Mm-hmm.
And after the war, he went back to England to go back to work for the Rothschilds. Is there any connection there?
I think there is. As was mentioned by an earlier caller, there was a connection between the London financiers and the South until the Emancipation Proclamation was issued. And so there are some things going on that I don't know that we have the full information. You know, there's conspiracy theories about this, that, or the other, but I think there was a connection that took place early in the war that was later ended.
Okay, fine. Thanks so much, Steve.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye now.
Let's go to Ken from San Jose. Hi, Ken. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. I disagree with Pastor Whitney on the issues he's bringing up.
What specific one?
I like his comment on that. Okay, first, the United States had already had an experience with a weak central government. In the years immediately following the Revolution, the Constitution had not been adopted. Instead, we had the Articles of Confederation, and it was a total disaster. So the Constitution was adopted. It's true, as part of the Christian philosophy in founding it, they did take into account the evil nature of man. They tried to establish checks and balances in the Constitution. But you have to have a strong central government, because it's necessary for the industrialization, because you're not a base of any country, because the modern society can't exist, as a backward industrial state such as the South was. You have to have an industrial base.
Well, now wait a minute. Now you're telling me the theory, but where does it say in the Constitution that we will have a strong central government?
It established instead of having excessive rights of the states, there was an establishment of, you know, the three branches of government: legislative, executive, judicial, and the Bill of Rights as a tempering influence, if an evil person did manage to take control, their power would be limited. So there was a checks and balances established with the existence of the executive, the 4-year term of the president, which to this day has been shown to be an effective tool in establishing a sufficiently strong government, not a totally powerful or authoritarian state, but a sufficiently strong central government so that we could have an industrial base and the great projects necessary to enhance the industrial base.
But it really doesn't say that in the Constitution. That is your interpretation, isn't it?
If you read
the Tenth Amendment says the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution nor prohibited to the states are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. In other words, the only power the federal government was to have was the power given to it in the Constitution. So the Constitution never foresaw something like the Department of Education
If you look at the Federalist Papers of the Rights of Alexander Hamilton,
mm-hmm.
The United States was established as an industrial republic. The South exemplified what these people would like to bring about today, the people that are ruling, the elite that's ruling now, the deindustrialization of the United States. The reason the South lost the Civil War is because they didn't have the industrial base for the army.
Well, of course, first of all, I think you're very selective in reading the Federalist Papers. Have you read the 45th paper? Are you acquainted with the 45th?
Who wrote it? It was
written by Madison.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you obviously are very, very well versed. Have you been taught this in school, or is this your own interpretation of it?
It's my own interpretation, but you're avoiding the issue of the industrial aspect of this thing.
Ken, is that there's nothing in the in the Federalist Papers that I know that talks about we being an industrial republic. What the 45th paper says, and I would suggest you get it, it says the power of the federal government is to be limited and defined. The power of the state government is to be unlimited and ill-defined. In other words, the major power will be with the states. And you miss the whole point of separation of power. Yes, we were to have the separation of power of the federal government, but we were also to have the separation of power between the federal and the state, and the state governments and the state governments and the local governments. We were to have certainly a very broad system of government with no centralization. In fact, they wanted to limit the power of the federal government. And as David said, and I wish you would address this one issue, the 10th Amendment. All powers not specifically herein given to Congress or reserved to it by the states are to be reserved to the states and the people. How do you address that with your idea, of course, that we would have only a strong central government?
Well, I agree there's been abuse of, and they do go against the 10th Amendment, that's correct, but the other issue...
They do go against the 10th Amendment. Yes. Doesn't that bother you that they're going against the 10th Amendment?
Yes, and it's because of this elite that uses it because they control the federal government, they use that as a weapon against against Christians, for instance, in the case of Roy Moore in Alabama. I agree that's taking place, but the other part is you have the reason Hamilton and others wanted to establish an industrial republic is when you have industry, you have enough social surplus to provide enough wealth for the average person to enjoy a good standard of living. That was the whole idea of the United States, was the land of opportunity.
And that's not the truth.
Our founders established this because they recognized that God has given us certain rights, and those rights only come from God, and no one can take those rights away. Someone can usurp them, someone can violate those rights, but you can't take them away. They come from God. Governments, as the Declaration says, are instituted to preserve and protect those lives.
Right. What about the industrial issue? You're avoiding that.
The industrial issue is not mentioned at all in the Constitution.
Where in the
Federalist Papers.
Where in the Constitution, specifically, does it mention the industrial issue? Where in the Constitution does it mention the industrial issue, which you keep coming back to?
Yes, well, do you disagree that the United States was becoming a powerful industrial state?
Sure,
and that wasn't the purpose. That wasn't why our founders put together this form of government. They put together this form of government because they recognized a strong, centralized federal government is dangerous because it is the only form of government in our system that has a monopoly. But the British prohibited...
Each state does not have a monopoly, because if you don't like the laws of the state of Virginia, you could move to Massachusetts, or you could move to wherever. But if the federal government, having monopoly on the power, if they enacted laws that were evil, you had no alternative. You could not escape from them. People could not vote with their feet like they could in terms of the state. And so they recognized that the monopolistic, centralized government has to be strictly controlled. And 99%, I believe, of what the federal government is doing today is unconstitutional. You read what the Constitution, the powers the Constitution grants to the central government, they're very few, and they're very limited. And most of what our tax money is going to be spent on today are unconstitutional things that the government should never be involved in, including the war in Iraq.
Yes, we've only got 30 seconds, though, because we got one more caller.
The central issue in the Revolutionary Wars is the British prohibited manufacture in the colonies because they wanted to have this monopoly in England. The United States broke it with the Revolutionary War, and that's the basis of the standard of living and it's Christian economics. You folks don't understand it.
Well, thank you so much for your call, and let's go to Roger calling from Allentown, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, thanks. I was chafing with a bit in the last call. I think he's trying to find a basis for socialism. He referred to this surplus supposedly reserved or found in the federal government. Now, how is that to be if it's limited in revenue, et cetera, to provide this basis for socialism? I think he was trying to read that backwards into the initial interpretation, and that's why he required that industrial base. That's what I was clearly getting out of that.
Well, I think that the thing is that the prosperity of our country is a byproduct of freedom. It is not the reason for our freedom. We have a strong industrial base because at least we had, to some extent, a free society. But, of course, there was always the effort on the part of wealthy people to manipulate the government to their own advantage. And the battle through the ages has always been between the power of government and the individual who wants to be free. Would you agree with that, David?
Yes, because what our founders recognized, I mean, they watched what took place in Europe. They saw what was happening in the nations of Europe. And they saw when a king has all the power centralized in his hands and he can make all the decisions without any check or balance on his power, what you have is a terrible dictatorship and no freedom at all. The only way that you can have a system of government is to have the checks and balances between the three branches, federal, the judiciary, the legislative, and the executive, but also, as you mentioned already, the levels of government stand, that the state was actually to have, each state was to have more power than the federal government. You know, when President Lincoln went to Robert E. Lee to ask him to be his general, his chief general in the War of Northern Aggression, Robert E. Lee turned it down, and he turned it down because he said he could not fight against his own nation. What? His own nation? He viewed Virginia as his nation. In a sense, they saw each state as a sovereign, independent nation that were in a union, but the union was not the all-powerful. It was the state that was powerful, and the union was just to help them function together. A completely foreign idea to people today, because actually our individual states are more like just counties, you know, subdivisions of the federal government.
And, of course, people have forgotten that liberty and limited federal government are synonymous, and even limited state government are synonymous, and tyranny and total government are synonymous. And I would far rather live in poverty as a free man than live in affluence as a slave. And unfortunately, we may very well live in poverty as slaves before long. Hey, we're just about out of time. David, give your telephone number one more time.
They could reach us at Institute on the Constitution, 410-760-9068. That's 410-760-9068. Or they can find us on the web at iotconline.com. That's iotconline.com.
God bless you. Thanks so
Thank
much
you
for
so
being
much,
with
Dr. Stan.
Us. And remember, ladies and gentlemen, when freedom fails, why, good men rot in filthy jails, and those who cry appease are generally hanged by those they hope to please. We'll be back in just a moment here to wrap up this program.
Have you ever wondered about the boys we left behind in Vietnam and Korea? Did you ever know that we left 25,000 American boys behind in Russia, in Siberia at the end of the Second World War? Have you ever wondered what really happened in Oklahoma City, what really happened with TWA 800 and the went down off the eastern coast about a year ago? Well, ladies and gentlemen, all of the subjects are well covered in a fascinating book by Craig Roberts entitled The Medusa File. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, order The Medusa File. Actually, Craig Roberts was a police officer working out the Oklahoma City bombing. Now, this book has been suppressed very effectively across America, and it's self-published, but I promise you that there's no other book I know that will give you more contemporary history, frightening history that every American needs to know. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR now.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I just want to mention that we are going to be having an all-day seminar. It's going to be out at the Aptos Seascape here in the Monterey Bay area. It's going to be on Saturday, November 29th, and of course, a good time, I hope, will be had by all. We'll be having talks on the real reason for the war in Iraq, the USA Patriot Bill, what's happening to the churches, and, of course, the move away from traditional teaching of the churches, the changing of the message and the music of the churches. Have you noticed how the music has changed and how the message has changed and the presentation has changed? Well, this isn't happening by accident. I hope that many of you will want to come. Now, we have to have reservations in advance because we're going to serve lunch that day, and we have to know how many people are going to be there. And so give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. If you can make it on November 29th, and that's at the Aptos Seascape here in the Monterey Bay area. And, of course, we'll be talking about health issues. Bill Sardi will be here. Joan Paris will be here. Dr. Klenk will be here. Brad Dacus will be there. I'll be speaking as well. And so we do hope that you'll come. And we had a great, great time when we did it last year. We hope we have even more people this time. So give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 to make your reservations or to find how to send a check in advance. But we're going to have to. We can't make the same mistake we did last time, and that is not insist on reservations ahead of time. So if you're coming, why, let us know. Let us know now. And, of course, I think that you'll find it'll be a fascinating, fascinating opportunity, not only, of course, to hear the talks, but to talk with people from all across California. Sometimes the last time we even had a fellow come in from Austria, but to talk to people who feel just as you do, that we're losing our freedom here in America. I hope to see you there. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when we have to remind our listeners out all across America that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. Help us as we reach out 5 hours every day with the news you're not going to get from Rush Limbaugh, Bill O'Reilly, Dan Rather, Tom Brokaw, or Barbara Walters. And so if you'd like, of course, to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, it's as simple as calling us at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And for a suggested gift of $20 a month or more, you'll get our four best tapes. You'll get our monthly newsletter. But more than that, you'll be helping us, of course, doing what we do. And, of course, we're going to lose America. We're losing it very, very rapidly. In the name of fighting the war on terrorism, sort of like the war on in Vietnam. We never went into Vietnam to win the war. In fact, all during the war, why we subsidized the Russians, who subsidized the North Vietnamese, who were killing our boys in South Vietnam. Robert McNamara put restrictions on how the war would be fought, knowing full well that we could never win the war that way. I personally talked to William H. Sullivan, the American ambassador to Vietnam, to General Lewis Walt, who was a four-star Marine general. Both of them told me we could have won the war in two months, but they weren't allowed to win the war. And Sullivan said, I never understood why we didn't win the war. I'm not even a military man. I could have won the war at any time. And, of course, like we're fighting the war on drugs, like we're fighting the war on terrorism. Who's financing Al-Qaeda? Well, of course, Robert Baer's latest book, and he was a CIA agent for many years. His book is entitled Sleeping with the Devil. He tells you that the Saudis have put over $500 million into Al-Qaeda. And, of course, from everything we have, they're still finding us Al-Qaeda. And who's funding and who's supporting the Saudis? Why, of course, our administration. And they're doing everything they can to keep the American people from questioning who is financing these Islamic terrorists who are moving into Iraq to kill our boys. Where are they getting their weapons? Why, they're getting them from the massive weapons dumps that we're leaving totally unprotected with all sorts of munitions. And then they come in and they load up the munitions, they put them into vehicles, and they take them in and blow up our boys. Why aren't we just destroying all those weapons? I mean, if we can't guard them, let's destroy them. Oh, we wouldn't want to do that. It's so wasteful. Well, why don't we then put guards around? Oh, we can't put guards around them. And so we leave all the weapons there for the enemies of freedom. What's wrong with this picture? Or maybe the war on terrorism really isn't a war on terrorism. Maybe the war on terrorism is a war on the American people to restrict our freedom step by step with new legislation. And, of course, Osama bin Laden's always coming up with a new report about how they're going to attack America, and then the attacks never materialize. I wonder why that is. Well, there's so much that needs to be said, and Radio Liberty is on the front line trying to get the information out. We hope that you'll go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Look at the various products we have, and actually we carry the Big Berkey products there. If you're interested in buying them, if you buy them through us, why, of course, you'll get the four-tape set or the video that we produced. And, of course, you can listen to our programs there 5 hours a day. You can, of course, pull down our archive programs. You can pull down our newsletters, and you can help us get the truth out across America from sea to shining sea. For our listeners, of course, out across America, I just want to mention that we are going to be having a seminar on November 29th here in the Monterey Bay area, if you'd like to know more about that. It's going to start at 8:30 in the morning, run until 5 or 5:30 in the evening. The number to call, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and our ministers, but please remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until we're together again, this is Dr. Stan saying goodbye, and may the Lord be with you.